Welcome to Issues That Matter. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is my friend Scott Ritter. The media kept saying it was going to be so close to call, and it was a blowout. So, what was your initial reaction?
On November 5th, I did a very long show with Gerald Celante, Garland Nixon, Joe Lauria. I think we started around 7 o'clock to watch the returns in. And at the beginning of the show, before any of the returns came in, we went around and said, what everybody's thinking. And I said that it was going to be Trump in a landslide, that it was going to be a complete blowout. And some people were shocked by that, but I said that, my analytical point was the absolute propaganda that was being spewed by the mainstream media, just straight up lies about polling and about this, about the other thing. And I realized that the establishment was in a panic, that they knew what was about to happen. And so, when you see, for instance, when you see the mainstream media running with a poll that shows Kamala Harris is going to win Iowa by 3 points, I mean, that was my point. I looked at that and I said, that's so ridiculous, so outlandish. It would never pass muster. And yet they're running with it because they're panicked. They're desperately looking for hope. And these are people who have their finger on the pulse. They know what the truth is. And the truth is Trump is going to slaughter her. And he did. He did. I know there's going to be people out there saying, well, the popular vote was, thin margin, and in certain swing states the margin was this, the margin was that. Guys, he wasn't even supposed to compete. Wasn't even supposed to compete. This wasn't even supposed to be close. So when you're talking about, margins, this, that, and the other thing, remember that the starting point is that the Biden-Harris team was supposed to run away with this. This was never supposed to be close. That Donald Trump was totally unqualified for the job. That there was no way America is going to fall for this line, et cetera, da 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 da. So when you use that as your starting point, and then he dominates across the board, it is a landslide. He swamped the Democrats, and this means he has a mandate. He has a mandate to rule. And again, whether you like it or not, Cynthia, I walked my dogs this morning and I came home, and on the way home, I listened to WAMC and I
Oh
listened to their
boy.
morning panel. And
Yes.
I've never heard more panicked progressive liberal nonsense in my entire life. These people are so embarrassing to listen. They should listen to themselves. They got whipped, and they don't want to acknowledge they got whipped. They acknowledge they got whipped, but only after cackling. These are people like it's a bunch of elitists sitting there in the first class section of the Titanic after it hit the iceberg, sitting there cackling at the workers running around trying to evacuate the ship. Look how silly he is. Cackle, cackle, cackle. Look at this. Cackle, cackle, cackle. Guys, you got beat. And one of the reasons you got beat is because of the lack of intelligence in your ability to. I remember listening to the same people. Trump will never win. Trump can't win. Trump can't be allowed to win. Can't blah, blah. Now he won. Matt Gaetz can't be the attorney general. Can't be allowed. He's going to be the attorney general of the United States. Tackle away, WAMC. There's a thing called recess appointments. And Donald Trump is going to execute the recess appointment. And Matt Gaetz is going to be the attorney general of a revolutionary Trump administration. That's what people need to understand. If you're using as a benchmark business as usual to govern, to judge the Trump, you're off base. This is going to be for better or worse. I'm not up here saying this is going to be, automatically this is going to be good. For better or worse, we are going to see 4 years of government that we've never seen before. This is a revolution designed to destroy the establishment, not fix it, not modify it, to destroy it. Matt Gaetz is picked as the attorney general because his job is to destroy what the Trump administration believes is a politicized and weaponized justice system. And he is going to destroy it. This is revolution. This is the guillotine. This is heads coming off, not literally, but politically. And if you're not ready for it, you're going to be spend a lot of time listening to WAMC cackle to themselves.
I when I put on MSNBC over the past few years, Trump is this, Trump is that, blah blah blah. If the Democrats were really committed to winning the election, they would have run more qualified candidates. I mean, in this heyday, you've dealt with Biden personally. He was pretty sharp in the days that you and him had words, but and Kamala Harris, to me, didn't seem like a very bright person. So if that's the case, they would have done something, but they didn't. So my feeling is, you guys got this isn't a funeral. You killed yourself.
Yeah, they committed. Look, this is something that we've been seeing. Establishment politics. We watched the Republican Party commit suicide in 2015, 2016. Donald Trump came down that staircase in Trump Plaza and announced his presidency, and everybody treated him as a joke, as a joke. Orange face, buffoon, this, that, and the other thing. He proceeded to go up on a stage with 16 or 17 of the establishment Republicans, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. I mean, these are the, and he wiped the floor with them. Why? Because the Republicans stopped governing. They started ruling. They forgot that their job is to be responsive to the needs of the people, and they started instead totally caving in to the demands of special interests. So Donald Trump came in and wiped the floor with them. The Democrats that same year, you had a guy named Bernie Sanders running. Bernie Sanders was tapping into a populist, the same populist, emotions that existed in the America that people were supporting Trump. Bernie Sanders could probably have beaten Donald Trump in a stand-up election, but the Democrats couldn't do that because their job was at that time was not to be responsive to the people, but rather yield to special interests at that time were dominated by, the Obama Clinton clique. They anointed Hillary Clinton to be their presidential candidate. They went into a Democratic convention and stole it on her behalf, and she got beat. Trump came in, and how did the Democrats respond? By putting up the most establishment person. Yeah, Biden used to be sharp, but Cynthia, you know this. In his sharpest moment, when he ran for president, he never got more than 2% of the vote. The American people don't like Joe Biden. They don't love Joe Biden. They actually, most of them despise him. He's only relevant because he owns the state of Delaware, and he's able to win the vote. But he can't win on a national election, which, brings up 2020 and what happened there. But we'll leave that for whatever investigations might take place. But he ran saying, I'm going to be a one-term president. I'm the guy that's going to stop Donald Trump. I'm the guy that's going to save democracy. And Kamala Harris is going to be my vice president. Well, she's a DEI pick. She got slaughtered by Tulsi Gabbard in the debate. She didn't win a single delegate, dropped out early, no support at all nationally, and suddenly she's the vice president. She didn't do anything for 4 years, nothing. She was a non-entity because she's stupid. She's not good at what she does, and Biden couldn't entrust her with anything. They literally just made her move around and do things. They didn't entrust her with anything. Anything she touched died. She's that bad. And yet now it comes time to, go up against the orange-faced bad man again, who's decided he's going to run. And again, the Republican Party died in 2016. They don't have, Republican Party is dead. There's a new party called MAGA. MAGA is the new political strength. It has an R next to its name, but it's not the Republican Party. It's not Mitt Romney. It's not Mitch McConnell. It's not any of these old established, Lindsey Grahams. Marco Rubio is not MAGA. Ted Cruz isn't
The
MAGA.
bushes.
The Bushes are dead. They're gone. They're finished. MAGA is MAGA. MAGA is J.D. Vance. MAGA also morphs into something we call MAHA. Make America Healthy Again. It's RFK Jr. It's Tulsi Gabbard, former Democrat who's jumped over. This is a movement here, and the Republicans got nothing. The old Republican Party is dead, finished, done. This is the new political face that the Democrats have to run against. And what did they put up? A DEI candidate, Kamala Harris. But they didn't even put her up the right way. She should have gone into a primary. Had she gone into a primary and been challenged by Democrats, she definitely would have lost. She couldn't win a primary. The Democrats could then have put somebody up who went through the crucible of the Democratic selection process, and at least the Democratic Party would say, this is the person we want. But instead, they hung out with Joe too long. His brain died in mid campaign, and they had to get rid of him. They launched a literal coup. A literal coup in America. If you don't understand what happened, they went in and they told the sitting president, you can't run for re-election. You're done. Step aside. And we're going to hand pick this person who's incapable of winning a single delegate in a Democratic convention. And we're going to make her the candidate. And then people wonder why they lost. The Democratic Party is dead. Where's their bench? We know what the bench of MAGA is. We know what's going to run on the MAGA platform in 4 years, J.D. Vance. And I'll tell you what, J.D. Vance, from a MAGA perspective, is looking pretty darn good. The guy's smart, he's intelligent, he can hold his own against hostile media, and he's going to get polished up. By the time 4 years comes down the road, he will be presidential because he will have served as a vice president in an administration that's going to let him be a vice president. There will be visibility. He's not going to be a Kamala Harris, let's keep her out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. He's going to be a vice president, whether you like him or not. This isn't an endorsement of him. I'm just telling you right now that MAGA is a revolutionary movement that has control, full control of the United States right now, and they're moving in a revolution. How are the Democrats going? Who are they going to put up? AOC? No. I mean, what's the Democratic bench? What's the bench? They don't have a bench. This is the end of the Democratic Party. And the danger here is that if Trump pulls this revolution off in 4 years, J.D. Vance will be the president of the United States. And if it's successful enough to get J.D. Vance elected, he could be president for 8 years. During this 8 years, this revolution is going to be ongoing, destroying the very edifice, the very establishment, the very special interest relationships with the establishment that empower the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is going to collapse, and they don't have anything to challenge. So
It
after
has collapsed.
it has collapsed, and it won't rebuild. So now, at the end of J.D. Vance, let's say Tulsi Gabbard gets selected. She grows in this DNI position in a J.D. Vance administration, becomes Secretary of State. Maybe she's the vice president. And now, boom, she gets elected. We're looking at 12 to 20 years of MAGA being in control of the United States. The last time we had something like this was during FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the changes that took place there that got us out of the Depression, rebuilt, redefined America, the New Deal, the whole thing. For all the people out there saying that this is horrible what happened, look, America is fundamentally broken. If you don't see that, you've got a problem. We are broken as a society. We are broken. We are divided. Our economy is failing. We're losing credibility on the international stage. This revolution is coming in seeking to redefine America. It may not succeed. Not all revolutions do succeed. But this one has a chance of succeeding. And if it does succeed, past 4 years of Trump, 20 years of MAGA revolution can redefine America. And I'll tell you what, it'll be an America that the cackling idiots at WAMC won't have a role in because they are the problem. They're elitist, cackling, laughing at what's happening in America today is so damn insulting to every American in need. Do they not understand that we don't identify with the University of Albany pathetic professor with a tenure who sits up there and cackles at us because of our suffering? We don't identify with the NPR radio elite. We don't identify with those elites because they don't identify with us. They are an elite group that, and you know this, New York politics. New York politics isn't about the man or the woman, the working class. It's about three people in the back room making decisions to define everything. This cackling group of idiots, the WAMC cackling idiots, are part of that. And that is over. MAGA, whether you like it or not, is targeting that. They're targeting all of the establishment. And if they succeed, they're going to bring it down. There's no guarantee they're going to build something good. This could be horrible. This could be a disaster. This could be the end of the world. This could go bad very quickly, but it's going to happen. That's what people need to understand. That's what the cackling idiots at WAMC need to understand. This is happening. And you can cackle away all you want, but what's going to happen is people are going to turn off the radio. You mentioned MSNBC. It's up for sale.
It
It's
is.
over. CNN, they have to fire all of their high paid. They can't. Legacy media is dead. You know what the most important media source is in America today?
The
X.
internet. Oh, okay.
X. X is the number one source of news. The what you're doing, what I'm doing, what other alternative media podcasts are doing, this is becoming the mainstream. We are becoming the source of news for all these talking heads that have taken corporate money and are beholden to the Biden administration, beholden to old school Republicans and all that. They're gone. Cynthia, the revolution is here, whether you want it to be or not, it's here.
You know, one of the things that they kept saying on MSNBC was Donald Trump is not smart. He's dumb, okay? They called him dumb. And I'm thinking to myself, he was smart enough to tap into people's feelings about the economy. That's not dumb. He did a populist campaign. That's smart, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I look, anybody who knows me knows I'm not a Donald Trump fan. I mean, my wife is telling me to shut up. For once, you just shut up and play the game and join, get on the ride. And it's hard for me to do that because I'm not a Donald Trump fan. But I am a fan of revolution. I think America is broke. And if left unchecked, America dies. And as a loyal, patriotic American, I don't want to be a part of that. I think this revolution is needed. Would I like somebody else besides Donald Trump in there? Yeah, except we might not have a revolution if it was anybody else but Donald Trump. Donald Trump might be the only person that could have pulled this off, because he just does things so differently than everybody else. But to call him stupid, I think he's clever like a fox. And let's take a look at his cabinet picks, like foreign policy. The first thing we have to note is that this was never going to be good for Palestine. We knew that. We knew that a Trump administration was never going to be good for Palestine, except it may turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to Palestine. And I'll tell you why. We know that the Biden administration had sold out to Israel. And I mean, look, these are the guys that said, if Israel doesn't allow aid into Gaza, we're going to cut off military shipments in 30 days. And they timed it so that 30 days was after the election. And now here we are after the election, and the aid didn't roll in. And Biden says, "Ah, that's okay. No, we're just going to continue supporting Israel no matter what. It doesn't matter that because the reality is we're incapable of supporting the Palestinian people." Biden's gone. He's out. Trump is in. Elise Stefanik, she's at the United Nations. She is hardcore pro-Israel, insanely pro-Israel. I want to remind everybody that Elise Stefanik, as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, does not make policy. So please never mention her name again because she is irrelevant. People will say, well, what about Mike Huckabee, the U.S. ambassador to the U.S.? I mean, this to Israel. This guy's dangerous because he's one of those born-again Christian evangelical Zionists that believes in the rapture and Armageddon and that we have to support Israel, not because we like the Jews. Actually, I just news flash to people. Evangelical Zionists, they hate the Jews because the Jews are evil. Let's study the rapture a little bit more, will we? And understand what happens when the Messiah comes back. And, there's this war. And then the believers, Christians, rise up and go to heaven. And then everybody else stay behind. Guess who stays behind? The evil satanic Jews. They don't go to heaven because they're evil. So all you pro-Israeli idiots out there that are saying, thank God for evangelical Christians, they hate you. They despise you. They're using you to achieve suicidal rapture. And that is Mike Huckabee. But he is the ambassador. He doesn't make policy. He implements policy. So don't worry about him. Who implements policy? Marco Rubio, Secretary of State. His name is there. And then this Secretary of Defense's name that I can't pronounce because nobody knew about him before any of this.
The fox guy.
The Fox News guy.
Yeah.
He's there. And then, of course, we have the National Security Advisor who's, rabidly pro-Israel, anti-Iranian, all that kind of stuff. And people say, well, Scott, how could you possibly, make these turds smell like roses? Because it's pretty bad. You do understand that the only person who makes policy in the Trump administration is Donald Trump. I'll say it one more time just so people understand. The only person who makes policy in the Trump administration is Donald Trump. Now, Trump has said that he doesn't want a war. Trump has said that he wants to improve the economy. So if Marco Rubio thinks he comes in on day one and says, hey, Donald, let's go to war against Iran. Or let's support the Taiwanese so we get to a point of conflict with China. Trump's going to say, no, that's not happening. Not happening. And he'll be backed by the Secretary of Defense. Everybody's down on this guy. There's a lot to be down on. I mean, he's a Fox News host. He's sort of weird. But this is a guy who participated in successive war games at the Pentagon against China. And he says, we lost them all. He knows the reality of the state of affairs of the American military. So when you have a Secretary of Defense who knows that if we go to war against China right now, we're going to lose because we don't have the capacity to do it, who knows that we can't win a war on the ground in Europe, suddenly you took war out of the equation. And this is also a guy who said, number one job, Secretary of Defense, is to rebuild the American military, but at the same time, reform the military industrial complex. He says it's highly inefficient, costs too much money, we don't get the bang out of the buck. This is a reformer. A reformer. Yes, he's a Fox News host, but he's a reformer. So Rubio comes in and says, war. The Secretary of Defense goes, can't afford it, got to rebuild. So Trump says to Rubio, no war, go out there and fix things. But that's not the most important position because neither one of them makes policy. The most important position is the person that comes into the White House every morning and briefs the president on the intelligence. That sets the stage. It used to be the job of the CIA. Ray McGovern, whom I think and your audience knows, a former CIA intelligence analyst, used to be the guy who briefed did the presidential daily brief. CIA doesn't do that anymore. The presidential daily brief is done by the Director of National Intelligence. And it's the Director of National Intelligence that arrives at the White House every morning and briefs the president in person about the state of the world. Every intelligence professional at that level for the past 30 years is a liar, somebody who can't be trusted, somebody who has allowed intelligence to be politicized, to be manufactured. People who sold us weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, people who sold us the war in Ukraine, who sold us, Syria, sold us, Iraq, who sold us everything. They lie, they lie, they lie, they lie. Their job is to fix the intelligence around the policy that the president seeks to implement. And that's why we fail. Tulsi Gabbard has integrity. She's a serving member of the United States Army. She's been to war. And if you people criticize her because she had the audacity to say that Bashar al-Assad is a legitimate leader of Syria. She has the audacity to say that Putin is perhaps right about this war in Ukraine. And now she's going to be the director of national intelligence. And when she briefs the president, she's not going to be somebody who comes in and blows smoke at him. Her job is to tell the president the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And so she will set the president up with reality every morning. And then the president, based upon this reality, will turn to Marco Rubio and say, fix it. We got a system out here broken. We need to fix relations with China. That's your job, Marco. He'll turn to the Secretary of Defense and say, how do we deal with this threat? Remember, I don't want to go to war. How do we contain this? Or do we need to build a military down the road that does this? And that's the focus. The most important person here of all the foreign policy picks is Tulsi Gabbard. She's the single most important person because she's the, remember, Trump is the policy guy. Just look what he did with North Korea. Mike Pompeo, who was Secretary of State at the time, did not want him to do this. John Bolton, who's the National Security Advisor, did not want him to do this. Nobody wanted him to do this, but he did it anyways because he's Donald Trump. And it almost worked, except he was betrayed by Pompeo and Bolton. They stabbed him in the back. This is how Donald Trump's going to operate. Marco Rubio is not going to be running around the world having glorified meetings with national leaders. Donald Trump is. That's his job. He is the king. He's Donald Trump. Rubio's job is to sit there and support him. You'll hold the paperwork, put it in front of him so he can sign it. Tulsi Gabbard's job is behind the scenes to tell the president what the truth is. Most important job in this National Security Administration is the Director of National Intelligence because it's the one job that has the ability to influence Donald Trump, who is the kingmaker, the decision maker, the policy maker. Marco Rubio will never have this access or this ability to weigh in, and neither will the Secretary of Defense.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So, he's elevated women. His chief of staff is a woman, Tulsi Gabbard. So let's talk about what you see is going to happen. Let's talk first. The one subject we talked about a lot is Ukraine. You said that's almost completed, right?
Well, the war in Ukraine's lost. It can't be won. And I think, again, the president will be briefed on the realities and will have to adjust policies accordingly. I also think that the president isn't going to be encumbered with the baggage of NATO and trying to save NATO and salvage NATO and all this. I think NATO's over. NATO's finished. It's dead. I also think the president's not in the mood to save the European Union. That the problems that are manifest today in Europe are problems that Europe brought upon itself by blindly supporting policies of the United States. The price tag associated with salvaging NATO and salvaging the European Union is hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars that Europe can't afford, and the United States is not in a position to underwrite. So I think Donald Trump is going to leave NATO and Europe to its own, their own devices, and I think they're both going to collapse. Trump is going to look to restore relations with Russia to stabilize this situation, and that requires bringing an end to the conflict in Ukraine that are on terms that are acceptable to Russia. Ukraine is a non-player, a non-player.
Will we pull out of NATO?
NATO will collapse, and then eventually we will. We will pull out of the collapse. I think Donald Trump, you're going to see Trump or J.D. Vance negotiate the end of NATO. That is to help Europe transition into a new European security framework that'll include discussions with the Russians. But NATO, this edifice that's there, is over. It has no legitimacy, none whatsoever. It got crushed in Afghanistan. It's been crushed in Ukraine. And it's too expensive to save. At some point in time, a businessman like Donald Trump's going to look at the price tag associated with saving it, and he's going to say it's just easier to buy a new car.
What about Israel?
Israel is the more difficult one because this administration that's being built is a very pro-Israel, pro-Zionist movement. But again, the most important person here is Tulsi Gabbard, pro-Israel, pro-Zionist, but honest. What's she going to be briefing the president? Mr. President, Israel is in free fall. Its economy has collapsed. It can't be salvaged. The Saudis aren't going to resurrect the Abrams Accord unless there's a Palestinian state on the table. Israel says they won't accept a Palestinian state, but if we maintain the status quo ante, Israel ceases to exist as a sovereign nation state sometime by the summer of 2025 or in 2026. The rate of collapse is this extreme. Israel's losing against Gaza, losing against Hezbollah, losing against Iran. American military intervention won't salvage any of this. Indeed, the Secretary of Defense will tell you that we can't fight and win these wars. So we are going, if we're going to save Israel, we have to work on defining a Middle East that can accept an Israel. That's a two-state solution. And I think Donald Trump will have to become a proponent of a two-state solution. The problem for the Trump.
What about Netanyahu? He
What about
won't,
what?
right? He
Who?
won't accept
Who?
Netanyahu.
Did you just see? Have you seen Seymour Hersh's recent Substack?
No.
Netanyahu's dead. He's finished. He has committed a mortal sin, and he got caught. He gave a briefing to the Israeli public where he pulled out a document. Because he was trying to make the argument that Hamas is responsible for there not being a hostage deal, that the reason why the hostages aren't home is because of Hamas. And he put a document out there that was the Hamas explanation of October 7th in retrospect. Sinwar apparently had something to do with the production of this document. It was captured by the Israelis early on in the Gaza conflict. And it's the most sensitive piece of intelligence that Israel has. They don't acknowledge its existence. It's stored in a secure room in the intelligence headquarters where you have to go and sign in to read it, etc. Well, Netanyahu pulled this document, the most sensitive document, and published it without permission. And he said, "This proves that Hamas is to blame." The second crime that he committed is you're not allowed to misrepresent intelligence to the Israeli people like that. The document doesn't say that. He quoted one page of a 12-page document without acknowledging that the next two pages afterwards said this was speculation. That's because what Netanyahu was saying is that Sinwar was going to flee to Egypt with the hostages and then go on to Iran and bring the hostages with him. Hamas was never going to give up the hostages. But the next two pages say this is absurd. No, we're going to stay here. We want a hostage deal. We're working to get the hostages released, etc. So Netanyahu lied. This is a huge scandal right now. It's so big that the judge presiding over it had to seal it to prevent a civil war because the issue of hostages is a big deal. Hundreds of thousands of people were in the streets protesting against Netanyahu's dead in the water. That's one of the big challenges of the Trump administration is how to push him out of the way. He is the problem, not the solution. So it doesn't matter what Netanyahu wants. But again, the fact is the Saudis are going to tell Trump, don't talk to us about anything regarding Israel, normalization of relations, economic relations, etc., until there's a Palestinian state. You have to create a Palestinian state. So Trump's going to tell the Israelis, you have to create a Palestinian state. And one of the things that has to happen is the West Bank settlements have to be dismantled. The moment Israel moves to dismantle the West Bank settlements, there's a civil war in Israel. Israel's already on the cusp of civil war. The moment they move to dismantle the West Bank settlements, it is over for Israel. And then the Trump administration. All these Zionists are dealing with a Israel that no longer can exist. And that's the fate of Israel and the pro-Israeli Trump government. Doesn't matter how pro-Israel you are, Israel's dying. Israel's going to die. Trump is going to preside over the Israeli funeral, not Israeli resurrection.
So, you and I have talked about the doomsday clock. Where is it right now?
I mean, it's right there. One of the big dangers of this Trump revolution is predicated on a couple of thematics. One thematic is peace through strength. So we're going to have peace by looking strong. But that strength has to be backed up with reality. And the other thing that Trump is putting out there is that the U.S. military will not back down. Well, if you have peace through strength, that means that you're putting strength out there. What happens if people call your bluff and say no? Now you have to back that strength up with military power that you don't have. The new Secretary of Defense will admit it. We can't fight these wars. But if we move in that direction, it becomes existential in nature, then we have to use nuclear weapons. And Trump, of course, is the man who redid the American nuclear posture and the current American nuclear employment plan to allow nuclear weapons to be used preemptively in non-nuclear scenarios. So this is going to be a very risky thing. But I will say this, while I'm not going to move the doomsday clock back, I will say that the hand is frozen. Had Kamala Harris won election, when I run the numbers on her foreign policy, it always came out to a nuclear war in 6 months to a year.
Oh boy.
So America dodged a bullet by not electing her. There's no guarantee that Trump's not going to give us that outcome. I did a meme. I don't normally do memes, but I did one anyways. And it was derived from the Avengers movies. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but there were two, Infinity Wars and Endgame. And, involves end of the world stuff. But a character goes forward to see, how they can save the world, which is collapsing. And he was asked, well, what do you do? And he said, well, I went forward 14 million 600 and some odd thousand times to look at all the alternatives. They said, well, how many of those did we survive in? He said, one. And so at the end, I did a meme that, is this the one? Yes, da, da, da. And basically, instead of saving the world, it is I voted for Donald Trump. Because a vote for Donald Trump, in my opinion, opened the door for that one in 14 million possibility that the world doesn't end. This is a very dangerous world that we live in. And it's one that we could have nuclear war manifest itself in Europe, in the Middle East, against China and Taiwan, against North Korea. In the North Korea, we have four very dangerous, volatile, situations around the world, all of which could go nuclear. And there's no guarantee that Trump has the solution for all of these or some of these. A very, very dangerous situation. But we're dealing with a revolution that's seeking to change the way America interfaces with the world. And if it's successful, we could avoid a nuclear war. But there's no guarantee of that success. Kamala Harris was going to lead to a nuclear conflict.
Let me ask you this. A lot of women, their top priority was choice,
True, though.
reproductive rights.
That's not true, though.
Wait, go ahead.
The exiting poll, just like people said of the Republicans, the top priority is immigration. 11% of people said that reproductive rights was the most important issue to them. 11%. A similar percentage said that's what's important regarding immigration. The most important issue, over 33% of Americans said the most important issue is the economy.
Okay. So, in my conversation with friends, they articulated that reproductive rights was most important. Those people that said that, those women who said that, didn't they realize how close we are to Armageddon?
No, it's the same problem I have with the anti-Israeli crowd, because how dare I meet with RFK Jr.? How dare I? How dare you meet with that Zionist? Shame on you. Well, that meeting produced a relationship that generated an article written by RFK Jr. and Donald Trump Jr. that was published in The Hill that articulated policies on behalf of the Trump campaign that said they want to bring an end to the conflict in Ukraine and prevent a nuclear war. Ah, do you suddenly see the wisdom there, people? I mean, if I told people that I was in contact with Tulsi Gabbard, how dare you be in contact with her? She's a Zionist. She's this. She's going to save the frickin' world. She's the only hope you have, you cackling idiots. And I would also caution against giving too much credence to the, just like I caution against giving too much credence to the anti-immigration crowd, giving too much credence to the choice crowd. You're not what you think you are. If you live in New York, you're in a bubble. But the election proved there's a whole country out there that's worried about other things. And actually, the bubble you're in is one that's limited to Albany, maybe to New York City, maybe other places. But outside of that, the economy. James Carville's maxim from 1992, it's the economy, stupid, resonates today as it did back then. And you're stupid not to believe that. If you actually thought reproductive rights carries more weight to working class America than what's in their damn pocketbook or their bank account at the end of the month, you're a cackling idiot on WAMC, and that's where you belong.
So, this is a conversation that will be continued. I'd love to hear your thoughts as the as Trump assumes office and his administration goes forward. So you've been
What
listening.
I'll say is this, Cynthia.
Okay.
I voted for him.
Okay.
So now I have to hold him to account.
Right.
That's what democracy is about. I voted for him, but if it ends there, then we're nothing. I'm going to hold him to account. And everybody else who voted for him needs to hold him to account too. And those who didn't vote for him, you get to hold him to account too, but your voice doesn't count as much because you didn't care as much. You believed in other things. So how do you hold accountable somebody who's implementing policies that you disagree with? So I'm sorry, you made a decision. You don't count right now. The only people that count are the people that voted for Donald Trump, and now it's incumbent upon them to hold him to account. And we will do so. And it'll be entertaining to watch the cackling idiots at WAMC respond to this because nobody cares about them. That's what they don't understand. Nobody cares what they think. If we cared what they thought, Kamala Harris would be president today. But the majority of Americans said, we don't agree with the cackling idiots at WAMC. And we don't agree with the idiots at MSNBC, and we don't agree with the idiots at CNN. This is going to be an interesting journey that we're going to be taking. And it's a journey that's going to be played out in venues such as yours, because this is where America's coming to get their information. This is where America's going to be influenced. One of the most important media events of this campaign was Donald Trump's interview with Joe Rogan. Whatever you think of Joe Rogan, I don't care. I'm trying to say this is good, this is bad. I'm stating a fact. The most important media event of this campaign was Trump's interview with Joe Rogan, and Kamala Harris's failure to reach out to Joe Rogan. This is the future of how America gets its news and how America engages in political discourse. X is going to be the most important platform. Again, I don't care if you think this is good or bad. I'm just stating the fact. X is the single most important platform for getting news today. All you cackling idiots who tune into WAMC, you don't matter. Nobody's listening. Nobody's listening anymore, except me when I take my dogs home from the dog park.
And I read yesterday that Elon Musk might become the first trillionaire.
Again, for better or for worse, do I like that much money in the hands of one person? No, but I will say this. For all, again, all the cackling idiots out there, because you're there. I know you are. You listen to WABC where they cackle like idiots. You do know that in the 2020 election, the Biden administration used Twitter and Google and other social media outfits to suppress free speech, to suppress free speech, and to lie to you, to distort this stuff. That's not good for democracy, ladies and gentlemen. Elon Musk bought Twitter when everybody said it's the dumbest. Do you remember that when he was buying it? How, oh, it's so stupid. What a fool. He's wasting money, this, that, and the other thing. And he turned it into a free speech platform. A free speech platform in a nation where free speech is a constitutional right. His is the, I mean, Rumble's out there, but in terms of, YouTube's not a free speech platform. They kicked me off. YouTube kicks everybody off. They stifle it down, they demonetize, they do this, they do that. It's not a free speech platform. The only free speech platform is X. And X is only a free speech platform because somebody named Elon Musk had enough money to go out and buy it. So I can't sit here and say I'm against Elon Musk having this much money because, he's doing things. Hell, look at SpaceX. Doing things that NASA can't do, that Boeing can't do, but he's doing it. History will judge, but I'm a lot more sympathetic to Elon Musk than I normally would be when somebody's on the verge of accumulating $1 trillion, because I honestly believe that he helped save America from a nuclear holocaust. Because if it weren't for X, the Trump revolution wouldn't have gotten the traction that it needed to get amongst the American people, because the mainstream media would have stifled it, would have prevented it from happening. X made it approachable, made it available to everybody. And look at the mandate that Trump got. The cackling idiots at WAMC aren't happy about it, but the American people certainly are.
So this is a conversation that will be continued. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Scott Ritter. And if you like this show, please subscribe to my YouTube channel. Thanks, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening.